The IND Files, the ultimate Colts podcast.
Welcome aboard. With week three in the books, it's time to take a spin around the league and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his insight regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. In this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the one and only Sean Salisbury joins us with his Tell It Like It Is take on the NFL. But as always, we start with the big interview, so let's get to it.
The big interview.
With us now is Jake Query from 97.5 WNDE in Indianapolis talking about the Colts win over the San Diego Chargers. The Chargers put up some numbers like they usually do, but it wasn't enough to win in a game where defense seemed to be at times a little bit optional. Andrew Luck had a terrific game, 331 yards passing, and T.Y. Hilton got more than half of that. It was fantastic. What did you see from the Colts as they try to turn around a bumpy 0-2 start, finally get their first win on Sunday?
Well, I think they were lucky to get away with one, to be honest with you. Look, Indianapolis is interesting to me because the Colts typically have gotten off to slow starts. And, you know, San Diego is a team that in the first 2 weeks of the season has been able to do the exact opposite of that. There was a great disparity between the two in terms of the way that they've been able and when they've been able to score, talking about the Colts and the Chargers. But it was kind of one of those games where you really did feel like San Diego was in control in the second half, and then the big T.Y. Hilton score that ultimately ended up to be the game winner for the Colts. I thought personally that Phillip Rivers might have been able to bring San Diego back down and at least get them, you know, in field goal range, but of course it was a four-point game. The Colts went for a two-point conversion, didn't get it, but it was still a four-point game, so in the last drive, San Diego needed to get a score, and the Colts defense was able to get a stop there. But, you know, I don't know really what to make of the Colts. That was obviously a potentially season-saving win, and that sounds crazy. But statistically speaking, there is a huge difference between 0-2 and 0-3. And if the Colts had gotten off to an 0-3 start, even though the schedule lightens up, I think, a little bit for them, then they would have been in a big hole. But when you're in the AFC South, you always have the possibility of working your way back into the postseason. But I guess a win's a win in the NFL, and I do think that San Diego – is a decent opponent. So if you're the Colts, you got to feel good about the fact that you got away with one and got out of there with a win, and quite frankly, one that they probably stole away in the latter part of the game.
Yeah, but after that, they don't count. They're just W's and L's. And when you look at the way Colts played, defense has been the challenge for them. Let's face it. They haven't been able to stop too many folks. Now, Phillip Rivers threw for 330 yards, but he didn't get in the end zone. And so what did you see from this sort of makeshift defensive backfield due to all the injuries to get them to be a little more effective with this? Because, look, Phillip Rivers is a guy that not only does he throw for yards, but he usually finds somebody in the end zone to shut him out. That's not that bad a performance. It means a lot of the yards were just empty ones.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is, you know, the Colts, to your point, have basically been a revolving door in their defensive backfield. Week one, they had two corners playing, literally, that they'd signed that week. And, you know, I mean, guys are probably wearing name tags in the locker room. But you get Vontae Davis back. You know, you get Cromartie playing at, I think, has probably been at this point a bargain sign for them. They didn't have to pay a lot for him. Mike Adams and Clayton Gethers, who's one of their safeties, has played well when he's been healthy. But I think what they did is they were able to get pass rush. You know, for the vast majority of the first two games the Colts played against Detroit and Denver, they were not able to get any pass rush whatsoever. They finally got it in terms of Eric Walden getting some pressure on Phillip Rivers. Robert Mathis, even though he didn't, I don't think, record a sack, was able to get in there. And then guys like Kendall Langford were able to get in and make some noise. I think that accelerated Phillip Rivers. And Rivers is a rhythm guy, I've always felt like. He got in rhythm last night, but they were able to interrupt him just enough to keep him honest. And that's what the Colts are going to need, because the reality is their defense, and you don't see a lot of teams that this is the case, but the Colts linebackers have been such a drop-off, especially with Jarrell Freeman departing to go to Chicago, that their defense really is predicated on Vontae Davis. He's the center of their defense, and everything kind of works out from him. So with Davis now back, coming back into the lineup after dealing with injury, that's a critical piece for them, and I think we started to see that yesterday.
One of the critical pieces that was lost, Cristante Moncrief, who was injured and expected to miss a few weeks. Philip Dorsett kind of comes in and takes that role. Got three catches, played a little bit on the four targets. But it's been interesting to me watching the evolution of Jack Doyle along with Dwayne Allen. You're starting to see a two tight end set, much the way in some ways that offensively that New England tended to run that a little bit when they had their pair of tight ends, and they're trying to maybe work that back up with Martellus Bennett and Rob Gronkowski. Often said the tight end's a quarterback's best friend. What have you seen from this pair of tight ends, especially Doyle, who isn't exactly a household name but is quickly becoming one?
Here's what's funny about Doyle. This is a guy that is from Indianapolis, played high school football about 15 minutes from Lucas Oil Stadium, and he's not even a household name in Indianapolis. So here's a guy that comes in, and originally it was thought, and this is what's interesting, when the Colts first drafted Andrew Luck, they drafted Dwayne Allen and Kobe Fleener in the same draft for him. And you thought, okay, Kobe Fleener is, you know, a kind of a stretch-the-field tight end. Dwayne Allen's going to be their short passing tight end, their blocking tight end. And then it comes to be that Kobe Fleener, they let go through free agency. They give the big money to Dwayne Allen. And again, the thought was that Allen was going to be their receiving tight end and that Doyle was going to be their blocking tight end. Well, now it's turned out to be almost the opposite of that. Allen is the guy that they're using almost in blocking situations, and Doyle has really emerged as an Andrew Luck target. Look, the reality is that when you have guys like T.Y. Hilton that can stretch the field, then, you know, Luck is going to look at that option. But those guys aren't always able to get open. They're not always able to get separation. And if they don't, tight ends are critical. They're always, as you said, quarterback's best friend. Doyle has really emerged, and the best thing about it is he's a very, very good value for them. You're looking at a guy that's not a big ticket guy, and so it gave them the cap flexibility in particular to be able to re-sign Luck. Colts have really, really cashed in on that. So far, it's worked out well for them.
We're talking with Jake Query of the Colts, 97.5 WNDE in Indianapolis. One of the things that's been challenging, Jake, for Andrew Luck at the beginning of the season, not only the pressure that he's been under, but one of the bugaboos hasn't been the interceptions so much. Six, you know, only a couple of interceptions, but it's the fumbles. And some have been lost and some have not been lost. Has there been any attempt to address it, or is this just sort of the understanding that it's a football game and every once in a while these things happen? But it seems like the Colts don't have that margin of error where they can afford too many of those.
Yeah, I think it's the latter, because last year the real concern with Luck, to be honest with you, when he was trying to extend plays, was just to get him on the ground. Because I think that Luck, you know, he has the size, and a lot of people don't realize the speed and the athleticism, to be able to run the ball when the pocket collapses. And I think that the Colts really, really worked with him in the offseason of, hey, you've got to learn how to slide and just get on the, you know, get on the field and protect the investment. He's been able to do that, but as we saw yesterday, all of a sudden, if you don't have a lot of protection, and the Colts have had issues at times with protection, you got a couple 300-pounders on you. Yesterday when he coughed up the ball, he probably would have liked to have gotten down on the ground, but look, he had nowhere to go. So he was certainly criticized for that, but I think their biggest concern originally was just keeping it healthy, truth be told. Now, his turnovers are an issue. The guy's a phenomenal talent. I personally think, this is just me, but I think the biggest concern for Luck, I know that the Colts downplay his shoulder injury and they downplay the fact that his labrum, that he's been, you know, listed as questionable. And I'm not certain that his ball has the 100% zip on it that it should at times. And there are times where perhaps he's throwing it away or floating one away. I don't know that he has the necessarily reliability from one throw to the next of knowing how much zip he's going to get on it. I don't think we're talking Peyton Manning late career level. But it's something I think to keep an eye on in the long term with Andrew Luck. There are still a lot of question marks about Andrew Luck. He has all the tools. And the one thing that I think is still that he's having to learn is just that clock in your head of a quarterback. And is he a guy that is going to get David Carr to the point of irreversible damage just in terms of his timing? I don't think that's going to take place. But I do think that the Colts need to continue to make the concerted effort to protect, and continue to try to build that offensive line, because you can never have too many good offensive linemen, and they already are starting to get kind of a rotation in front of them.
You described this win as a season-saving win to a certain extent, because you're right, the 0-3 start isn't good. On the bright side for them, the next two games are against two of the league's three 0-3 teams, the Jaguars and then the Bears. which potentially set up a big matchup against the Texans in the middle of October. This is, I presume, these are games that the Colts have to win. And what do you want them to look like in the process?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. The reality is, and I said this when the schedule came out, they're probably going to get off to a slow start just based on the way the schedule was built. I think Detroit is probably the NFC equivalent of the Colts. You know, at their best, they're pretty good. At their worst, they're very average. And Detroit got the better end of that matchup. But again, you lose to a non-conference team. There's not a lot of tiebreaker implication. Reality, again, is as long as you're in the AFC South, I think that New England did a huge favor to the Colts by giving, you know, by putting Houston with that loss. And so as a result of that, the Colts were facing a situation potentially, if Houston had won that game, where they could have fallen three games back already out of the box. Not going to be the case. It sounds weird to say season saving in week three. I get that. Maybe it's not season saving, but it prohibited season ending because you go 0-3, you're in a huge hole. But again, Jacksonville, who was kind of the sexy pick in the preseason, hasn't really gotten it going yet. You play them in London, so there's all kinds of weird factors there in terms of the travel and how it affects you and everything else. They absolutely have the opportunity to get back on the right side. And then, as you mentioned, Houston comes in. You've got an unknown quantity, I think we can all still say, in Brock Osweiler. So they're in pretty good shape. You know, are they going to be a team that's going to be a legitimate AFC contender? I don't think you can say that, but they are a team that can put themselves in position to be within a game or two of it, because if they win their division, they're in great shape. And they might, based on just their scheduling alone, put themselves in wild card position should that not be the case. I think if you're in, you know, the East or the North in the AFC, you probably, or even the AFC West for that matter, I think it's the weakest of the four divisions in the AFC, and I think that's to their benefit.
He is Jake Query. The station is 97.5 WNDE in Indy. You can follow him on Twitter at Jake Query. And we'll have him. It's terrific stuff here. This is an exciting team. For me, I looked at Indianapolis to have a huge bounce back season. So to see how they'll turn this around, it's going to be fascinating. And I think you're absolutely spot on Andrew Luck's situation. So, Jake, thank you very much for coming on today, sharing the information about the Colts. Look forward to talking to you next time.
Enjoyed it. Anytime, man. Let me know.
Thank you very much. We'll be back on the other side with the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
And now to go around the NFL, we bring in the coach, Brian Billick, brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. Coach, an interesting week where the NFL starts to sort some things out here. It's only 3 weeks in, but it feels like we've learned a couple things about some teams. And then there's a few we found out we didn't learn anything at all. I want to start right off with the Cardinals and Bills, a game in which Rex Ryan's seat could not have been any hotter, was basically almost in flames. And then they go out and absolutely trounce the Cardinals in a game where, quite frankly, Carson Palmer, to me, looked for the first time like he maybe was getting a little bit old. What did you see from both those teams this week?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise. It was an opportunity for Arizona. And you can always talk about that going from the, you know, quasi-West Coast to East Coast. They were playing at basically 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning body time, which is always difficult. But in an opportunity, in an atmosphere, and as you said, we've all talked all week about the pressure that Rex Ryan and the Bills were under at home. Had it not started out not well, you kind of know the way that crowd would have gone. But the thing that jumped out at me was just how much more physical the Bills were on both sides of the ball. Arizona came into the season as a physical front seven. They wanted to be able to run the ball. We know the explosives they could have with Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald and that group. And they just lack that physicalness, and that's something that's got to be a concern going forward.
So let's go over to the game that I thought it was early. It was the Thursday game, and a little bit stunning, really. The Houston Texans, off to a good start, just looked completely hapless and hopeless in Foxborough. Jacoby Brissett, in his very first start, showed up and played pretty well. Looked like Bill Belichick managed to just scheme Brock Osweiler into oblivion. How much of this do you chalk up to a bad game by the Texans where you just kind of crumple it up and say, let's go on to next week? Or how many things did you see in that game that maybe concerned you about the Texans? And by the way, who are the Patriots going to play at quarterback next week?
Yeah, good question. You know, we all have this well-founded confidence in New England at any time they're at home. That's just a tough place to play. And it's a tough place to play. And why are tough places to play? Because the team is good. Yeah, the crowd is a difference and can be loud noise and stuff like that. But they're tough at home because they're good. And you knew the game plan they wanted to have. Brissett was less than 20 passes, very efficient, didn't turn the ball over, converted on some third down with his legs, saw a whole bunch of blue air at Blount. They ran for 185 yards total on the night on close to 40 attempts. And you could see that Houston just couldn't get anything going. It was almost every three and out, which begs the question, okay, where does Houston go from here? Yeah, they're in a division that looks to be very winnable. But again, the challenge for Houston is, okay, can you progress through the playoffs? Have you shown any sign that your team, if in the playoffs, can go on the road, it can go into a Pittsburgh, go into a New England, and win? And they certainly didn't on Thursday night. Doesn't mean that they're not going to get better. And for New England, it's this faith in Bill Belichick is, maybe we don't even need a quarterback. Maybe we'll just direct snap to LeGarrette Blount, Julian Edelman. We're going to spot you. We're going to spot you know Tom Brady. We're going to spot you know Jimmy Garoppolo. We're going to spot you all these things. Really, it's kind of like the presidential debate. The low expectation coming into this next game, and this is going to be interesting with them playing the Buffalo Bills, because with the big win, the assumption is, and with no Tom Brady and no Garoppolo, and that they should just kill the Patriots coming off a really good win. If they don't, this is going to be interesting.
I guess that's a really good point, because I've talked about Rex Ryan a little bit, and we saw the Bills get the big win. Rex Ryan is already in full week taunting the Patriots on his Monday conversation, you know, kind of had a grumbly little Bill Belichick imitation. He's had a tendency of doing this before, and it's what makes him such an entertaining guy to cover in the NFL. But it also sometimes gets you in trouble, because you've run into situations with coaches, with players, with anybody who are sometimes writing checks with their mouth that they can't necessarily cash. If the Bills don't get this done against New England, does Rex Ryan stand the chance of basically undoing some of the good work that he did this week?
They could, but you've got to take that chance from the standpoint of, and knowing Rex as well as I do, and the time he was with me, if you corner Rex, this is exactly what you're going to get. It eventually wore out in New York. Why? Because eventually you've got to win. That's the only way to back it up. It's like any, and I hate to use the term bully, because I'm not referring to him as a bully, but, you know, sometimes the best way to confront a bully is just punch him in the nose. And all of a sudden now he's no longer a bully. Well, you've got to follow it up with a win. And for them, now it's in Buffalo. And you know the fans in Buffalo and everything, they've got that little bit of chip on their shoulder, and I think they love it, providing you win. But if you do that and you don't win, particularly under these circumstances, it was great to have a great win at Arizona at home. But if you're Buffalo, and if you're Rex Ryan, And now you're playing the team that is obviously everybody's in the division's arch rival, a team that's won the last eight division titles. And they don't have a Tom Brady, and they don't have Jimmy Garoppolo, and even where they had Brissett or whoever they have in there. If you can't win now in New England, then this creates a, we're right back to where we were square one last week, and where do you go from here?
Let's head over to the AFC, where no Teddy Bridgewater, no Adrian Peterson, no Matt Khalil, no problem for the Vikings, who go into Carolina and really play an impressive game, beating the Panthers 22-10, their second statement game of the year. Despite it seems that the pieces and parts are falling off the wagon, the Vikings have to be off to one of the more impressive and improbable starts of the season. When you see the way they've played in the last couple weeks, what's the ceiling for these guys?
Well, I don't think there is one, and you can fill it up in three things: defense. Sam Bradford's been great for them, and they'll find a little bit of a rhythm of a running game. But this defense is as good as I've seen, and I've got a little bit of a history with this. This is good, and it's a kind of a no-name defense, with no disrespect to the players. I mean, to most lay people, you're going to name someone on the Minnesota Vikings defense, and they might come up with Anthony Barr, but outside of that, you don't. Now, still, that's a talented defense. They have eight starters that were our former first or second round draft pick. So this is a talented defense. Mike Zimmer's brilliant. They don't do a lot. They're not a complex defense, but they're fundamentally sound in what they do. They know how to attack you. They're great open field tacklers. This defense is as advertised, and And this is a team with a quarterback that should be able to manage what they need to do to complement this defense that is very much the team to beat in the NFC right now, along with the Philadelphia Eagles.
When I look at the Vikings, what I see is a comparison to last year's Denver Broncos in a lot of ways, a team that, again, very talented defense, not all that tricky. There's not any sort of a gimmicks or anything you have to overcome. But it seems to me like this is maybe, to an extent, a poor man's Denver Broncos from last year with an offense that maybe has an opportunity to match that or even exceed the Broncos, and they managed to go the whole way. So when you look at the Vikings, that's a pretty fascinating story. We'll see where that goes. But as for the Panthers, they lost one regular season game last year. They've already lost two. From the macro level, what seems to be off?
Well, and that's a pretty lofty bar, you know, to win two games. So, oh, my God, you doubled your roster from last year. Well, wait a minute now. That's pretty tough sledding. I think what we saw in Carolina, everybody talks about the Super Bowl hangover. I don't know that I believe in that, although the numbers might indicate that. But when you play Carolina, the key is you got to get Cam Newton to throw the ball 35 times or more. Now, you could say that about a lot of teams, but Cam Newton's numbers, his productivity, falls off precipitously when he has to throw the ball 35 times or more. His 2.5 touchdowns to interception ratio drops to 1-to-1. His completion percentage drops down. I think he's 7-16, something like that, in games that he throws the ball more than 35 times. And so that's exactly what happened in this game. I think he threw it exactly 35 times. And they couldn't get the running game going. Again, let's go back to the defense, the turnovers that they created, the short field they were able to put that offense on. So I think this was more of less of an indictment of Carolina than it was noteworthy of what Minnesota could do on the road in Carolina.
Well, let's go to another team that's struggling after their loss last night in Monday Night Football. The Saints are 0-3. They're 0-2 at home, which is even more disturbing. Where does this team have to get better, and how much time do they have left in which to do it?
Well, it keeps coming back to the same formula. This is a team whose defense is bad in biblical proportion. I mean, I've been saying all week long that the biggest concern I had going in, and this is a perfect example, you look at the game, Drew Brees feels like, if I don't score 30 points, and last night 30 was not enough, but if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. When he gets in that mode, 2 years ago in 2014, he threw 17 interceptions. Why? Because they were next to last in the league in defense. 2 years before that, 2012, he threw 19 interceptions, and that's not Drew Brees. Why? Because they were last in the league in defense. They've got to go out if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. And that puts Drew Brees in a situation where he has to maybe make some throws or do some things that he wouldn't normally do in a more equitable situation. Even though Drew Brees had a brilliant night, Matt Ryan, who now the last two games has looked more like the Matt Ryan of old in terms, had a very equitable night in what he did. And I just think the defense that New Orleans is spotting team and what Drew Brees has to do to overcome that. I mean, throwing the ball 54 times, I don't care who you are, is just not a good thing.
Well, we'll wrap up with one of the faces of the league here. Last week, there were questions surrounding Aaron Rodgers, questions surrounding the Packers. Is something really wrong? Packers come out, Aaron Rodgers throws 4 touchdowns in the first half and does it effortlessly. For the Packers now, they got Eddie Lacy had his first ever 100-yard rushing game in September. Rodgers looks right again. Jordy Nelson is healthy. Was this just maybe the start of something special for the Packers this week against the Lions?
Well, and I think you just pointed out the key for them, their ability to run the ball. In the previous games, they didn't have that kind of rhythm. They need to have that running game as a balance. The unique thing about the Green Bay Packers is the receiving core, like their entire team. It's homegrown. It's always has been. When you had Donald Driver and Greg Jennings and in the heyday of their Super Bowl, and then a young Jordy Nelson. And I thought Jordy Nelson, when he got hurt last year, was great, great opportunity for the other receivers to get into that rhythm, with now Devontae Adams and then Randall Cobb and Rodgers, the tight end, to really you know, develop that rapport with Aaron Rodgers, and then now when you had Jordy Nelson back, boy, you're off and running. And early on, we didn't see that. We saw a bit of that last night, that we or on Sunday. Now, what we also saw was a defense that kind of let Detroit back in the door a little bit. So that's still my biggest concern for them. But offensively, it's hard to look at Green Bay and not feel like they may not lead the league in offense that we're used to seeing in these mega games, but they've got some balance and a plan. I like it when they come out of the no huddle, when they have a little more orchestrated offense. I think that suits them a little bit better. So they obviously have got to feel very good about where they are. But they're also in a division now facing a team that we just talked about, the Minnesota Vikings, that are pretty darn good.
He is the coach. This is Brian Billick, and we tell you every week when you listen to him, you become a smarter football fan. Thanks for your time, Coach. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Remember to visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. They present the coach, and make sure your family gets getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. So visit SeatGeek.com. Next up, we're going to overtime.
Overtime.
It is overtime, and joining us today, the inimitable Sean Salisbury. You know him from SB Nation Radio. Hey, I also know a guy from there. That's me. And you can find him at Sean Unfiltered on Twitter. I highly suggest, if you're not doing that, you should do that already. Sean, how are you doing today? Oh, hey, no problem at all. So we have a six-pack of questions ready for overtime. Let's start right here. Trevor Siemian had 312 yards, 4 touchdowns in Cincinnati, his very first road start for the Denver Broncos. Judging at the quarterbacking they had last year, is he a better option right now than Peyton Manning or Brock Osweiler was in 2015?
You know, better option, here's the difference. You had the Brock, who was more physical than Peyton. Peyton at the time, you know, when the change was made, and Peyton, who is the smartest quarterback we've ever had, and then the most – the best at manipulating a game plan or a defense that we've ever seen. So, and cerebral. So you had a combination of both, but I think this kid's got both. Now, I don't want to go overboard and say after three starts, he's better than Brock, but Brock only had 6 starts. So physically, and the ability, the things that he's showing, especially last week on the road, are pretty impressive. I'm not ready to go there yet, just right now after 3 games, because what Peyton did was keep you out of bad plays for the most part as well. So I think that combination's better still, but I'm impressed with this kid, the quantum leaps he's made from week 1 to week, you know, now heading into week 4. I give him a lot of credit, and I'm actually excited and proud of him. It's fun to watch, but I'll still stick with the two-headed guys from last year because of their experience.
Let's move on to a two-headed guy that's turned out by a necessity up in New England. Jimmy Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett, don't know which one's going to play, if either. Maybe it's even Julian Edelman, but does it matter? Is this team going to hand Tom Brady a bright, shiny 4-0 record upon his return from suspension?
Yeah, I think so, especially since they have this game at home again. Now, you know that they're going to try to pressure either guy, but the key, if you're going to blitz a young quarterback, you're probably playing into their hands, because then they don't have to go through the whole process of reading it out. They can just pick one receiver and bet the best matchup and throw it. So that's the problem. The key is play them zone and make them go through their progressions. But I'm not sure it matters, although obviously Garoppolo gives you not only the feet and the arm. I think you're a little more limited with Jacoby Brissett. That being said, we've never had a coach in the history of this game who's a better in-game adjuster and better game planner then Bill Belichick. Doesn't matter who they play. I do believe they're going to be 4-0, especially since this game's at home. I think Garoppolo is actually going to play, which is an advantage for New England. And Tom Brady comes back, and Cleveland is his first start, and they will be 5-0 after that one.
Jared Goff, the first pick in the draft, hasn't seen the field yet. No idea when he will. Are the Rams being too cautious with him, judging by the success of all these other young signal callers this season?
I believe so. Now, Case Keenum's a serviceable starter and a pretty solid backup and carved a niche in the league, but they've got a really good defense. And at some point, this just tells you how far behind the Wentzes and Dak Prescott that Goff is coming from his system. It just does. So, and Jeff Fisher is always leery. He's done it with players before about putting young guys in, but as long as they keep winning, he's going to be able to buy time without from the fans without having to start Jared Goff. But it just shows you terminology and how difficult it is to come from that system, an air raid system, and apply it to NFL, you know, the mechanics of getting under center. So they're going to stick with this as long as they possibly can, unless they lose 3 or 4 in a row. But Goff's, I didn't think Goff should have been the first pick of the draft. I think he'll be fine. But I liked Wentz. I actually like Prescott even better as well, and Paxton Lynch. So we'll see in the long run. But this is probably the best thing because he came out of camp not ready to play, and Case Keenum's getting him by.
Over in Green Bay, Eddie Lacy notched his first ever 100-yard outing in September, as hard as that is to believe. Notoriously slow starter, but we talked about the weight loss. Is this the year that he finally blossoms into one of the league's great running backs?
He's going to have to, and I think as long as he stays focused on making sure his body's right and can stay healthy, yeah. And it is hard to fathom that that guy's first September 100-yard rushing game this early in the season. It is hard to believe, but as long as Rodgers stays upright and they stay in rhythm, they're a difficult team to beat in the NFC. And I'm going to tell you the key for them, not only is protecting Rodgers, but it'll make it even easier on Aaron Rodgers and everybody else if Eddie Lacy stays healthy and can average a 22 to 30 carries or touches a game. So, yeah, I think this is a monster step for him. And in a league that we're kind of deficient of top flight first, you know, upper echelon, Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell type backs, I think Eddie Lacy can be one of them as long as the commitment to watching out for his body and taking care of it's there, because he'll get his touches, especially as the season rolls on in a cold weather Green Bay.
Sean, after the Saints' blowout loss on Monday night, Drew Brees talked about that game and said he thinks things will turn around for the Saints. How do they turn around when they're giving up 30-something points a game, and is it too late already?
Yeah, they're not. It's not turning around. That's because Superman, meaning Drew Brees, is so optimistic and has had to carry a franchise. Can you imagine how bad they'd be without him? I mean, good gracious. He has to hang 35 or 40 a week to keep them in a game. They're the notoriously bad defense, and maybe that has something to do with the fact that their offense, you know, scores a lot of points and plays fast and throws the football. But that's in it, you know, a lot of teams do that. So that's a bad excuse. They've got a lot of injuries on defense, but they haven't drafted well either. They're underachievers. It's a bad defense. Sometimes you just got to recognize that your personnel is not as good as the other guys, and it's impossible to ask a quarterback to throw 35 and 40 points a game on you and to throw for 5,000 yards a season and 45 touchdowns. Brees is phenomenal. He is the franchise. But it's not going to change. That team is going to battle for, you know, they'll be lucky to win 6 or 7 games, and if they do, it'll be because of him. It's not changing, though. The culture of that team is offense, bad defensive personnel, and it doesn't matter who the coordinator is, Rob Ryan, Dennis Allen. They're just not, whether they're not committed to it or whether they don't understand how to play it. Bottom line is the New Orleans Saints will always, well, at least for now, until the defense gets better, doesn't matter how good the offense is, they'll always be chasing people.
Now for the final question of our six-pack, we go to the Pacific Northwest. Russell Wilson is battling injuries to both his legs. Now, obviously, you want your line to protect you better, but at this point, is Russell Wilson now responsible for finding a way to better protect himself?
Yeah, he is. But he's really, you know, when he is he's taking some hits, and that offensive line is not good, and he had to overcome that last year and really took another step in his game. But they've got to make a commitment to that position. That's number one. But now we know from the ankle to now the knee, where is he going to be? You know, and after this, they have the bye week, so getting ready to play the Jets. Do you rest him and say with Arizona's 1-2 starts, St. Louis, I mean, or the Los Angeles Rams don't have a great offense, should we rest him? I think if he's 85% or more, you play him. But he is really good at finding pockets to slide in. So I give him a lot of credit. The problem is, taking hits in the pocket, you can't defend, and if you can't get out of bounds and it's 3rd and 3 and you got to dive for a first down, you're going to put yourself in a bind. But he is a great player, a great playmaker, but also one of the smartest running/passing quarterbacks we have in this league. But they have to keep him healthy, because we saw them finally break out offensively without Russell Wilson. That team will have to do what Denver's doing for the most part and win on offense. But Russell Wilson, if he's close to being healthy, they'll play him.
That is Sean Salisbury spitting the truth over at SB Nation Radio, and especially on his Twitter feed. Make sure you're following that at Sean Unfiltered. Thanks so much for your time today, Sean. Really appreciate it.
Honored to be on. I really appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted over at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files and check out all the podcasts for every team in the league, because we cover them all. My name is Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at sdrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R. And I will catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.